on you.
The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Welcome to the Blackshaw Arts Hour. It is another day, another podcast, another episode.
That's our new slogan.
Yeah. We should write that into the intro. I'm Aisha and I'm here this evening with Matt Boothman.
Good evening.
And Ellie Pitkin's back.
Hello there.
Ellie Pitkin's first show of 2017.
Good golly, Miss Molly. It's
yeah.
true.
It feels like a long time ago that we were sitting in this room together.
To some beings, it is a long time.
Okay. Coming up on the show, this show, Matt's going to review a very, very highly anticipated film, which we are going to get to very quickly because I know how excited everyone is.
It's the only reason I'm here.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that there's not more people in this room currently.
They're all outside. You just can't see them. They've got their ears to the door.
Because I did attempt an ultimatum where you weren't allowed to come and be on the show unless you'd seen it too. But
yeah.
Like, you two haven't.
Ellie so. And I failed.
We just laughed uproariously at that suggestion.
I also didn't pay for you to see it as well, which I feel quite bad about. Anyway, so we're going to hear Matt do that in a few seconds. And we're also going to hear a piece of new writing from our most recent showcase, New Writing Night. And we're also going to be talking about Punch Drunk later on,
yeah,
Matt.
About as their a... new digital thing.
Yes, that. And also Ellie's got some stuff to tell us about WAF. But the first thing that is going to happen is this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt, I don't even think you need to tell us what movie you're reviewing.
I mean, you said hotly anticipated movie. I don't know if the movie is hotly anticipated. I know that you guys have been hotly anticipating me talking about
okay.
it and potentially dropping myself in
I think
again.
You should just say the title as many times as possible.
50 Shades Darker. It's 50 Shades Darker than the last one. It's not. It's really bland. It's much blander than the last one.
Right, in there.
Yeah.
I mean, you described the last one as vanilla.
Thank you for the recap. So, the sequel to 50 Shades of Grey, the movie. We reviewed 50 Shades of Grey in 2015. Since that one came out, so there were lots of... even by the time we got round to reviewing it, there were production issues with the sequels, which were that, unfortunately, it had made enough money to qualify for sequels, but they lost Sam Taylor Johnson, the director, and Kelly Marcel, the screenwriter, in short order, allegedly because E.L. James, the writer of the novels... did not like the liberties that they'd taken with her text.
They'd taken liberties with her incredibly highbrow, well-written text.
Her incredibly well-written, highbrow, originally Twilight fanfiction, but now with the serial numbers filed off, yes.
Yeah.
They took liberties with that.
How dare they, those established and revered artists.
So this one's directed by James Foley, who I looked through his credits. He's done a few episodes of House of Cards and lots of what look like DVD type thrillers.
You may or may not be coming to this, but I would be interested to know whether you felt there were any differences by the fact that it was being directed by a man.
Written by a man as well. Niall Leonard wrote the screenplay.
So they went
for
from an all lady to all manny.
Because there was talk after the first one of they kicked Kelly Marcel and E.L. James was going to write the screenplay herself.
That's what we were talking about in the last review because we were laughing about it.
Yeah, but she doesn't have a screenwriting credit in this one. She has a based on the novel by credit.
Interesting. I wonder what happened there.
Yeah, Niall Leonard has a screenwriting
They realised she couldn't write shit.
Or maybe she realised that
maybe.
She didn't want to be writing things that real people might say out of their mouths.
We pick up in this movie the saga of Anastasia Steele, the most creeped on woman in Seattle and possibly the world.
That poor woman.
Yeah, first sort of 10 minutes of the movie, she's creeped on by her mate, Jose.
Jose's back.
Who's a photographer, and he invites her to his photo exhibition and reveals only once she's there that all the photos are of
her.
Oh, no.
Yes!
And are they like weird, creepy, from across the street type ones?
No, they look like she's posed for them, but they're definitely like...
She doesn't know about them.
Well, it's very clear that he hasn't asked her consent to exhibit these.
Right.
Or put them up for sale.
But she did at least know that he was taking photos of her.
She seems to have known that he took
them. Okay, slightly less creepy than anticipated.
Yeah. And so within about 30 seconds of that bit of creeping, her famous millionaire ex-boyfriend, Christian Grey, Jamie Dornan, turns up.
Oh, did they break up at the end of the last one?
They broke up at the end of the last one.
They sort of didn't really break up as more as she just got into the lift and left. But and it was implied.
She was very much like, I cannot do this with you anymore. You've crossed
all
boundaries.
All this bland vanilla sexual activity. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so she has a job in this one, being like desk editor for a fiction publishers, and obviously her boss is super creepy as well, because of course.
Obviously, and her boss is a man?
Yes.
Right, sure.
It's really doing wonders for the male sort of...
Yeah, men are having a good time.
Yeah. So, let's talk about Christian Grey.
Sure.
Okay.
My favourite.
That believable character.
I believe we said in the I said in the first movie that he's, like, the screenplay makes him out to be this... sort of excitingly dangerous kind of heavily, like, people treat him as like, wow, his sexual preferences are so off the charts crazy that
he's like the sex mafia.
Yeah,
because he's displaying them so readily as well, like he's just going to dinner parties and being like, guys, you would not believe what I'm into.
Yeah. So like he presents himself that way and the movie sort of presents him that way, but he was actually kind of dull. Like he owns 50 of the same shirt.
Yeah, he's super boring.
And yeah, his sex life is he has a room full of things that he's bought effectively is kind of the state that he's in.
Oh yes, I remember you saying he was well stocked.
He's very well stocked.
It's arranged and set up very well, according to Matt.
Lovingly, meticulously. In this one, there's a lot more of the potential serial killer about him.
Ooh!
A lot more
edgy.
A Bates Motel kind of deal. Cool.
That's more interesting.
Yeah, sort of. Basically,
it's more interesting that now he might kill someone rather than just have sex with them.
So the obviously she gets back with him in at the beginning of this one. And the relationship dynamic in this one is her condition for him having her back, which he must have her back and will not take no for an answer.
Right.
Her condition is a vanilla relationship, so no pain stuff, no bondage. Like,
but
we're just
going to
be a normal couple.
Sure.
And the movie kind of signifies this by having him wear fleeces and jumpers instead of suits.
That's so weird.
Oh, Anna, you can't change a man.
But that's what all the people who know him keep telling her. They all go, you're playing such a dangerous game because he needs to beat women and he needs the bondage thing. And
if that's his thing.
Yeah, and if he doesn't have it, I don't know what he'll do. Which just...
just be really boring.
Yeah, well, it just sort of reinforces this thing that like all the people around him are enablers and he is a potential murderer.
Right.
That seems to be...
Oh, because that's what he'll do. If he can't have his way in bed, he'll just do a murder on you.
That seems to be what they're all implying. Like,
and everyone's just like, everyone's super cool with that.
Yeah, I can't think of what else they could possibly be implying by saying,
so
like, if he doesn't get this...
They're literally saying, just let him hit you a bit so we won't kill you a bit.
Yeah, or someone. Yeah.
So weird.
Yeah, it's really, really strange. Yeah,
oh,
it's
God.
Like... Call the police.
What rating is it?
It's 18.
Oh, good. Because I don't want anyone under the age of 18 thinking that any of this is acceptable.
This is a normal relationship.
No.
Yeah.
Terrible role models.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, I think the certificate was 18 for strong sex.
Well, you see, I don't have a problem with the sex.
No.
Like, he can do all the sex, and if it's consensual, then there can be some, you know,
but
more than vanilla stuff. But
relationship standards are just, you know, they've set them really low.
The lack of... like conversation, consent, love, all the things that should go alongside sex.
Yeah, you know, the
really
nice
worrying.
Things.
and the gender balance is terrible. Like Aisha just said, like it really doesn't paint a good picture of men.
I mean, we can be terrible. We're sorry.
Of course, and so can women. But then again, I suppose women aren't getting portrayed in a great way either. If she's like, I'll have you, but only if
you're
not you.
All the other women in it are competing with her for him. And tell
it. And that's their only role?
Yeah, basically. Mm. It doesn't pass the vegetal test.
It doesn't pass
because the only conversations she has with women are about him.
Sure. Does she have any friends?
Yeah, yes. She's got that one girl.
She has one friend who is now, in this one, married to Christian's brother.
Well, that's unnecessarily complicated.
No, because they remember they went to like that wedding or something.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen it or read it.
Oh, well, they in the first one, they, she was a character.
Okay.
And got with his brother.
And is his brother super weird too? Or
No, he seems like a normal dude.
Just a rich
except
dude.
In the way that, like all the other characters, he seems super cool with this serial killer behaviour.
Sure.
Mm.
So, shall we talk about the sex?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Because that, I think
that's what we're all
is
here
one
for.
Of the things that is actually better in this one.
Better in what sense?
Like more sex? Because the last one I was very disappointed.
I didn't count the scenes in both.
Oh,
I
let me
feel
count
like,
the scenes.
I feel like there was more in this one.
Was it high quality?
Let's unpack.
Okay,
that.
Good. Talk to us. Talk to
so,
us.
So, I feel like this one was more plotted in the. Do you know the kind of. But the thing that. The way you plot a porno is you write, they have sex 8 times, and then you fill in the gaps.
Oh, right. No, I hadn't heard that.
I really feel like that's how they
that's
scripted
how they approached
this
it.
Movie.
Oh, wow.
Great.
And possibly,
it's like
possibly
first ever brainstorm, guys. I've got this great idea. Yeah. I heard about it at this workshop that I went to on the weekend. Here it is.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, what works is that the sex scenes are all focused on her, and on her response and on her pleasure.
So it's point of view.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it's. I will say that it is different to how most sex scenes in Hollywood are shot.
Okay.
It's mostly men from the eyes of men? Is that what you're saying? It's more
yeah,
from
I would
her
say
eyes?
most movie sex scenes are male gaze.
Because that's how that's most true. Porn is shot.
Mm-hmm.
Is yeah. male gaze.
Yes.
But
considering that it's a male director this time.
But, so that does make sense.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm surprised is that the main audience here is supposed to be women, mm-hmm. in theory. Like that's yeah. who reads the books, apparently.
Well, that's what I mean, is that it's not. So it is focused on, we get lots of his bum. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And his pecs.
Sure.
Any yeah. of...
The full frontal?
No.
Yeah. Oh, what?
Do you get the full frontal on the lady?
No genitalia.
On either. Okay,
really?
That's fine. I mean, I think
lots
you've just got to be fair.
Yeah. Lots
that's
of butt,
fair.
Lots of top half. But like I said, it's focused on her getting her kicks.
Okay.
Which I think is kind of good.
Yeah, sure.
That's a good position to be in, I guess,
yeah.
as a woman.
Lol.
Yeah. Apart from that, I mean, all the sex scenes are basically the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the rhythm of them. Yeah, there we go. First gaff of the night. Yeah, the way they are put together is the same all the way through. And that's actually true of all the non-sex scenes as well. Like, every scene of the
right.
two of them talking is shot in exactly the same way.
Like, the same angle.
Like, they're framed
the
exactly
the
same.
Do you know
right.
what, though? Like, I said this last time in the last movie. I wonder if they're, like, taking the piss with this kind of... With that. Because it's so obvious to me that it's such a boring film because it's
yeah.
laid out so boringly and everything's the same and it just follows this, you know, rhythm of let's do this 8 times over.
Do you
and
think
I'm like,
it's supposed to represent how their relationship isn't ever really progressing?
Or just
I
how
think
boring
way
he
too
is.
Deep for this movie.
But, like, that's what I think. Like, I'm like, come on, we can drag something out of this. And it's like, maybe it's a reflection of just he's the most boring person ever. And, you know, his exciting sex life is his only redeeming quality. So, therefore, he's a terrible person.
Well, I think it sounds like Matt thinks we're overthinking it. And actually, the filmmakers are just sticking to a kind of
formula,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've not read the book, so I don't know how faithful it is, but it feels like they've just gone, let's adapt the book chapter by chapter.
Right.
I will say this about the books, which mm-hmm. I think I started reading the first one. They're the kind of book that you can skip pages in.
Yeah.
You can scan.
And still know what's happening.
Yeah,
right.
Like it's a scan book. That's yeah. how terrible it is.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about in the sex scenes?
The music.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Was it... Do you a standard saxophone?
No.
Dad wrote a porno kind of style.
So I don't know if you've noticed, like, the soundtrack to the movie has been advertised almost more heavily than the movie itself.
Someone wrote a song for it, didn't they?
Lots of people wrote songs
yeah.
specially for
okay.
it.
Yeah.
And it shows because they're so on the nose.
Oh,
like,
really?
Like, the Halsey song in it, like, is when she finally, like, accepts and starts letting him do some of the kinky stuff again, and the
she's worn down. Yeah.
Sure. And it really is that. Oh. It's like he keeps insisting and she's like, well, yeah, okay then. But, you know, seems to start liking it. Who knows? Maybe they're meeting in the middle. But the name of the song and the key lyric from the song is I'm Not Afraid Anymore.
Right.
Playing over her not being afraid anymore.
That's like it's that so... daytime TV show.
Days of Our Lives.
No, it's the property show, Homes Under the Hammer.
Yeah.
They literally will say things like, oh, well, if they can turn this cheap deal into a bucket of gold, then it'll be magic. And then the song comes in and it's literally like, oh, 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 it's magic.
Yeah. It's
every
that,
time.
Is that school of... I feel like they're almost going... Somebody in the production team has gone, well, obviously this movie's going to get panned. Like, people will see it, but it'll get panned.
Yeah. Mm.
So let's make sure that at least the soundtrack sells.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's try and make some money out of it. Yeah.
That's, I mean, every time
a significant thing happens, it's like, here's a pop song someone wrote specifically for the score. Sure. Not the score, the soundtrack.
Yeah.
So who's do you have a list of the writers of the songs?
Not all of them. Like, that Halsey one stuck because it was so on the nose. I think Ellie Goulding's written one. She had one in the last film.
She's
very breathy. She's awful. I imagine that's good for sex scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, the music sounds awful.
Yeah.
It just all sounds terrible.
All the stuff that happens between the sex, the plot points all kind of, they're all calculated to kind of ramp up tension, but they end up just fizzling and going absolutely nowhere.
Mm.
So
ideal.
There's this whole plot point about one of his former submissives is now stalking Anna and seems to want revenge for her, like, stealing Christian and, like, not treating Christian as he deserves to be treated.
Okay.
Or, like, not letting Christian treat her the way that he thinks that she deserves to be treated.
Sure.
It's all very tangled. but that builds throughout the movie and then just sort of flops. And
Nothing happens,
resolved in one scene. And that's fine in terms of action, but there's no emotional payoff either. So it sort of allows Anna to see Christian in a different light because she's seeing him through the lens of somebody who he's actually treated the way that he is used to treating people. But she sort of has a wobble for a scene and then immediately takes him back again and everything is hunky. And, like, yes, let's get married. Spoilers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, yeah, that sounds like a good relationship to just take the next step in.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely follow that through.
There's a bit where his helicopter crashes for no reason.
Oh yeah, I forgot he has a helicopter. Yeah.
He's got a lot of modes of transport.
We said we were going to talk about vehicles.
How many vehicles?
There is a helicopter and there's also a yacht.
Of course there is.
He has a yacht.
That happened in the first one.
So they go sailing. Was there a yacht? I don't remember a yacht in the first one.
So the helicopter inexplicably crashes.
The helicopter inexplicably crashes for no discernible reason.
But he survives,
reason.
Sure.
Like, everybody's gathered in his apartment going crazy because his helicopter's crashed. And for some reason, the news is covering his helicopter crash. And, like, the woman... This must be an original E.L. James line, I think, because the newsreader is there going, and Christian Grey has crashed in, and she lists, like, the make and model of the helicopter.
Okay.
Like, unnecessary detail the news would not cover. Like, she does not
or
talk
sponsor,
like a human person.
Think?
I don't know, maybe.
Might
product
be a film
placement
sponsor.
For helicopters?
Yeah. Well, if they needed a helicopter to crash, maybe they got one for freezies on the basis of saying what it was.
I mean, you don't even
How's
see
it work?
Crash.
I don't know.
You don't even see
Did
it
you
crash.
See a picture
you see,
of it?
You see it smoke for a bit.
Well, that's a helicopter.
That's not good product placement.
Maybe.
It crashed.
Yeah. But they say it was a mechanical failure.
I mean, the point is, everybody's going crazy, and it seems like Anna's going to have some sort of revelation or breakdown because, like, this is the first time she's seriously been worried for his life, and maybe this means she loves him. And then he just, like, the elevator goes ping.
He just walks in.
And he's like, what are you all doing here?
He's just got, like, a bit of, like, smudge of dust.
He literally has, like, a bit of blood makeup around his hairline, and like, just enough to be kind of like, oh, this guy's a bit rugged and he's been in some trouble.
He's such an asshole.
We're going to have to bleep this one.
You're going to bleep so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't bleep it for the podcast. It's fine.
Yeah. So it's like, it sets up this situation that's supposed to be tense and maybe evoke some sort of, like, emotional turning point, and then it just doesn't. It chickens out of everything.
Sure.
Because the movie is so... Well, the plot and the authors are sort of so invested in these two have to get together because we have to have another movie.
It's really teasing you.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you hate this experience?
for most of the time I was in there, I was just bored.
Yeah. Right.
It's really bland because it really has boring. No, it has no pace and drive because all of these plot points just build to nothing. And you're just like, oh, yeah, I guess they're going to have sex again.
Did it feel really long?
It felt very long.
Yeah.
And there's it doesn't even have any. It like the last one had some quite memorable clangers, like lines like that just don't sound like anything a normal human would say. Like, I think I remember saying you can tell which lines are direct lifts from the book
and which lines
have been written by Kelly Marcel, who is an actually competent screenwriter.
Right. Mm.
And so there's no big clangers, and there's no scenes like that contract negotiation scene from the first one, where the creative team had actually managed to take the source material and do something vaguely cinematically interesting.
Yes, it was very red, I remember.
Yeah, there's not even anything. There aren't even any scenes like that. Like I say, every scene is shot the same way.
Yeah.
And have they built it up on a cliffhanger for the third film, which I think is happening?
The creepy, stalky boss thing is sort of set up as being this is something that's going to pay off in the third one.
Mild peril.
Yeah. Oh, like he sort of hangs about looking kind of red-eyed and unshaven and smoking on the outskirts near the end.
Sure.
Brooding. And obviously, like, she says yes to his marriage proposal, but they don't actually get married in this one, so that will be something that presumably happens.
Oh, weddings on the cards.
I mean, that'll be pretty over the top, I assume, if he's got all of the monies.
Well, will it? Because he's got all of the monies, but he owns 50 of the same shirt. So just be expensive?
No, it'll just be like the most boring wedding you've ever seen in your life.
But just really expensive.
Yeah, like all the wine glasses will be made of like expensive rare crystal, but you won't be able to tell. They'll just look like wine glasses.
Sure.
it won't even be like gaudily bling.
It'll just be a normal wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a wedding magazine.
Oh, except
boring.
He probably won't let her eat any cake because he likes to control all her eating.
Mm. Oh, is that another thing?
That is another thing.
That's what he does.
Yeah. The whole thing is he wants to own her. He wants to control everything.
Yeah.
So the perfect basis for a marriage.
Yeah. Well, this one is about her pushing back against that more and actually forcing him to do compromise. But she also does compromise. Maybe there's something vaguely emotionally healthy happening. I'm clutching at straws, honestly.
I did see the trailer, and in the trailer, she does a dominant thing to him.
Yeah.
So I did think, I guess that's the point of this one, is that she's going, hey now, you can't beat me all the time.
There's plot points about his traumatic childhood.
Then we forgive him everything.
Yeah, exactly. It's
That's why he is.
It's very much framed as his birth mother was a crack addict and his dad beat him, so therefore.
That's why he's got all those scars all over his sexy body.
That's why he likes to beat his sexual partners.
I mean, it's just dodgy psychology, the whole thing.
The whole thing is, like, in the same way as the whole thing is very linear, it's all very very shallow in terms of any kind of character motivation. It's like, this guy had a bad childhood, therefore he's a sexual deviant.
Yeah.
And she was a virgin until she was 20 whatever, so she's very
submissive
and mousy and scared in
broad strokes.
Yeah, very broad strokes. Oh, this guy is a boss, therefore he's gonna creep on his female employees.
Yeah.
That's awful. What absolute trash. I'm so sorry.
It is really fun watching Jamie Dornan, who plays Christian Grey, being interviewed about it, because he basically just looks sad and tired whenever he asks any questions about it.
He does sad Ben Affleck.
Yeah. And it's quite nice because he's perfectly happy to chat about, you know, whatever, himself, etc. But as soon as, because he's obviously doing these promo tours for the film, as soon as they then ask about the film, he's like, yeah, so it's about this.
Because
he's so weary.
In the wake of the first one, when Sam Taylor Johnson quit and Kelly Marcel got booted off, there was definitely talk of Jamie Dornan more having walked off as well.
Yeah, because apparently they hated each other.
Yeah. I don't think he's enjoying it, but I think A, it's probably pretty difficult to get out of the contract.
Definitely.
And B, all the monies. Like, he's got a young family.
Yeah. Well, I remember that was his justification for wanting to get out of it, was it's money, sure, but he's got a young family and it's affecting his, the way other people relate to him.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
Oh, I do feel quite bad for him, because I watched it, like, I had only ever seen him in the first 50 Shades, and then I watched The Fall recently.
Oh, so good.
And he's Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Obviously he's playing a crazy person.
Yeah, he's playing a serial killer.
Yeah,
but he's incredible.
Absolutely incredible.
Playing an actual serial killer who the script treats as a serial killer.
Yes, and he actually has to act, you know, to affect that character. And he's so fantastic in it. And it really kills me that an artist who is clearly very good at their craft is doing something that's just such trash. Like,
well, hopefully because The Fall is now so well known, he's not going to be typecast
hopefully
in terrible films forever. Yeah.
I think he probably didn't do his reputation any harm by, like, making it known publicly that he wanted out.
Yeah. I think that was probably a very smart PR
he's
move.
He's the injured party now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, poor Jamie. What a...
Well done, Matt, for going to see it.
Thank you. I appreciate and will accept your praise and gratitude.
I feel like we've talked about it for a very long time. It's probably the longest one that film review that we've ever done.
Just cut it all. Cut it.
I feel like Matt wants us to cut it.
I want their.
Oh, you want this on record?
I want my money's worth.
Okay, so that was 50 Shades Darker. I feel like that you did it justice as bad. No, you did. I'm not sure what I'm saying.
I would like to know if anyone else out there has seen it and what they thought. So if you have thoughts and want to write a quick tweet length review, then please do send it in to us at Blackshore Update. We'd love to see what you think about it.
Most definitely. So thank you, Matt. And we're going to move on to a piece of new writing now. This is a piece written by Chris Buxey, and it was performed at our most recent showcase, New Writing Night. It's called The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell.
Frankie Fightwell and the Nazi Man Spiders. Chapter 4. Slowly, carefully, Frankie picked her way through the Stygian darkness of the corridor, brushing disturbingly large cobwebs from her path. She had no idea how deep underground she was. It felt like she was halfway to hell. Her hand brushed along the unnatural walls as she passed. They were coarse, hand dug. No tool had touched the dark earth of these tunnels. Interesting. Finally, up ahead, she saw a glimmer of light. But not the welcome light at the end of the tunnel, a sickly light that seemed to say, "Turn back." But Frankie Fightwell didn't know the meaning of the phrase, "Turn back." More cautious now, Frankie crept towards the end of the tunnel. She brushed aside the final sheet of cobwebs and beheld a sight more horrifying than any she had seen before. A vast cavern stretched before her, the distant walls unseen and unknowable. Banners of red spun silk fluttered from the walls in a stale breeze. Swastikas haunting their centres like thick black spiderwebs. But this wasn't what held Frankie's attention. She could not take her eyes off the row upon row of hideous hybrid man spiders. Each of the 6-foot arachnoids had their arms held out in a crude emulation of the swastikas on the banners. Together, their chittering, scratchy voices rose as one, echoing from the walls and ceilings. "Spid Heil," they chanted. "Spid Heil."
"Spid Heil." "Spid Heil." That's just bad.
Although it was quite clever, actually.
I preferred my last adventure. You know, the one with the vampire sharks. That story had a bit more... bite. You could really sink your teeth into that one.
Please, don't pun about my work. And thankfully, it's not up to you.
You're just...
a frustrated male sexual fantasy.
What? No, you're not. You're an inspirational heroine. You're...
Lara Croft on Heat. I'm just grateful to be called Frankie Fightwell and not Sandra Sexhall.
Don't be ridiculous. There's nothing like that in any of your adventures. It's all wholesome young adult literature. There's not a single suggestive line.
Oh, no. You leave that all between the lines.
I don't know why you're being like this. I wrote you to inspire young women to look up to the stars.
I think I've inspired more young men to look down between the lines.
I wrote you to help inspire my daughter.
I'm sorry.
Look, can we just get back to it now?
Yes, of course. We need to inspire some young women, be an example. They need to know what to do when they get passed over for promotion by a less qualified Nazi man spider.
Come in.
Stuart, mate, how you doing?
Oh, you know, not so bad, you?
Yeah, not bad. How's the writing going?
That's the pleasantries done with, is it?
Sorry, mate, look, I am your agent. And anyway, I've got no idea if you've even properly started the latest Frankie Fightwell book. Never mind what it's about. I know you don't like showing the stuff before it's finished, but what's the title? I mean, you could at least tell me that.
It's called Frankie Fightwell and the Nazi Man Spider. It's going rather well, actually.
Whoa. I'm sorry, but Frankie Fightwell and the Nazi's Man Spiders? You can't call it that.
What? Why?
Well, what if it offends someone?
It offends who? Nazis?
No, look, all I'm saying is these are interesting times. There's no point in cutting off a growing market segment.
Jesus Christ. Okay, let's imagine that we live in the nightmarish world you think we do. Aren't Nazis better known for burning books than reading them?
As long as they pay for them before they buy them, I don't care what they do with them afterwards.
You come here to horrify me, job done. If not, why are you here? You never visit me at home.
What? I can't drop by my favourite author unannounced.
I thought Stephen King's lawyer asked you to stop doing that.
Oh, yeah, very funny. Why don't you put that in your next book? Look, I'm here because I have some concerns about the Frankie Fightwell series.
Yeah, me too.
Concerns? Meaning what exactly?
Well, sales for the series are down. I know that, you know that, and the publishers certainly know that.
This one will be the best yet.
It may also be the last one. I'm sorry, Stu, but the publishers don't want to renew your contract. But listen, don't panic.
Don't panic? Don't panic? You're telling me my livelihood's going to be taken away and you don't want me to panic? Well, tell me when is a good time to panic, because this seems like an excellent time.
Calm down. It's all fine. I have a plan.
Great. Very reassuring. What do you suggest? Other than marketing the books as alternative firelighters?
I've been thinking. Nothing draws people back to a series like the tragic demise of a long-running character.
What are you saying?
Well, if someone dies, old fans will come rushing back to buy it. It's like car crash TV. People want to know how it happened. Sales will be up, the publishers will change their mind, and you can start again with a brand new contract, a brand new series, and a brand new character. There's only one thing for it. Trust me. You'll need to kill off Frankie Fightwell.
You've just been listening to a piece of new writing called The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell. That was written by Chris Buxey, and it was also shortlisted for our Blackshaw New Writing Award of 2016.
17.
Because it's 2017 now.
That is correct. It was one of the 5 shortlisted pieces for the Showcase Award 2017.
Thanks, Ellie. I love it when you're here. It was directed by Phoebe Hitt. Frankie was played by Abigail Morgan. Stuart was played by John Raymond. And Dominic was played by Tom Slatter. And speaking of new writing, I think we're going to talk a little bit about...
a thing, yes.
Some things.
So we have a little plug to do. So one of our previous New Writing Night writers had a piece called The Meeting, which he showcased as a very early draft at one of our New Writing Nights. And it's now going to be on for a short run at the White Bear from the 14th to the 16th, no, the 18th even of March. So if you are around during those dates, then do go and check that out. It's called The Meeting.
And the White Bear's fun.
Yes.
It's really good. Pub theatre.
Yes, yeah. Pub theatre.
A big advocate of pub theatre. It's £12, £14 for tickets, so very affordable.
Yep. Mm. So go to the White Bear website and you'll be able to find all the infos.
Yeah. We're going to talk about something that Blackshaw is doing this year, aren't we?
Yeah, all right. We'll talk about that.
We're obviously like doing our new writing nights for the entirety of 2017, because obviously this is the first show that you've been back for,
yeah,
Ellie.
Yeah, so this year was dubbed the year of the new writing night.
Yeah.
We've already had two. January. We've had one in January.
We've got something coming up, though.
We've got Carlic Oak coming up, which is an industry performance of the winner from 2016 at the Pleasance, which is very exciting, and we'll tell you how that goes. You can find out all about it on social media.
That's by Jerry Moynihan.
Jerry Moynihan, indeed. We just cast that recently, and they're in rehearsals at the moment. But the thing that you can get tickets to come and see is happening in May as part of the Wandsworth Arts Festival. So it's going to be the fifth year that we're doing a show at the festival.
Really?
I know, that's crazy talk.
Wow.
So
is it the Wandsworth Arts Festival or the Wandsworth Arts Fringe this year?
Wandsworth Arts Fringe this year.
So 1F this year.
Yeah.
No, we lost the F last year, Matt. It went down to 1F last year.
I'm sorry, I'm behind the times.
Yeah.
WAF.
Hashtag WAF chat.
Yeah, although that's not being used anymore. It's hashtag WAF 2017.
Ooh. Oh, that's
I know,
boring.
I did mourn the loss of my hashtag, but that's fine.
It was so fun to say, hashtag WAF chat.
I know, right? But no, hashtag WAF 2017.
All right, WAF.
So we're doing something that we've never done before as part of The Fringe. We are performing at the Putney Arts Theatre, which is very exciting, and we're going to be doing a murder mystery play for the radio.
Whoa.
And we're recording it live in front of an audience. So it's on Saturday the 13th of May. You can buy tickets via the Putney Arts website. Tickets are very affordable. They are £10 and £8, I believe. And it's on at 6 p.m. There is another show on before and after us, so make a day of theatre of it, if you will. Mm. The most exciting thing about it is that the sound effects are all going to be done live, as well as the performances. So our lovely sound man, Andy, is going to be on stage with the actors with a table full of sound-making items.
Andy must be so psyched about this. People know Andy from being on this show before. He was on our 50th episode, yeah. I think was the last time. And he just loves to make sounds.
He does. And Foley, which is making sounds for radio, is always super fun and often not what you would think is making the sound to produce the sound. So, like, he's talked to us before about having to punch a wet towel to make the sound of a dog running across sand.
Yeah.
So I believe Richard Stratton, who is writing the play, is going to be ensuring that there are some bizarre sounds featured to challenge Andy to create them live on stage.
So we're recording it so that it will be on the Blackshaw Arts Hour, right?
It will be broadcast, yes.
But you definitely get a better experience by coming to see it live, because you'll get to see Andy doing all his things.
Yeah, it's very much going to be a kind of visual and audio experience to come and see it performed live. And of course you'll get to see all of the outtakes when it goes wrong. And I believe you may even be able to help create some of the sounds as audience members.
Ooh, audience participation, but not the scary kind.
But not the scary kind, exactly.
The fine noise-making kind.
Yes.
That everyone's happy with because they clap at shows anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And it will be all together. There won't be anyone singled out.
I have this wild notion that people listening to this might be into radio things.
Do you think?
They should totally go and see this.
Relevant to their interests, potentially. Yeah. So, as I say, all the information in terms of buying tickets is up on the Putney Arts website, and it will be all over our website and social media really soon.
I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to be performing in it, by the way.
Whoa!
I'm going to be playing a minimum of one character.
That's so
possibly more than one character.
Ellie's very multi-talented. Is there going to be costumes? Is it going to be
No, so it's
proper radio.
Yeah, so I've been to like BBC radio recordings before, and it will be done very much in that kind of way, where you have one or two microphones for the cast on the stage, and everyone's sitting on chairs at the back, and you literally stand up with your script and do your bit into the microphone, and make sure you're standing just behind someone to jump in when it's your turn. And then at the side, there'll be Andy with his Foley table. I think he might be supported by David Turnbull, who has done sound for us many eons ago before he became a very responsible primary school teacher. And Dave is a pro, so he'll be able to provide literally an extra pair of hands.
Yeah. I think Andy will just need to be passed things.
I think he'll need to be passed things. And I think some
otherwise,
things
I can see him getting quite frantic.
And... Yeah, and some things might require two people to operate.
Yes.
There's a hippo in the play. And I feel like creating the noise of a hippo might need two people.
That's tough. Murder mystery involving a hippo, I'm well on board.
Yeah. It's called Some Treachery, a Miss McSkimming Mystery.
And I suppose if people saw our production of Alice in Wonderland,
yes,
then you would expect the same kind of vibe.
Yeah,
because so Richard wrote that as well.
Richard adapted that from the Lewis Carroll classic, and it's got all the same kind of silly humour in it. And it's the kind of humour which is family friendly, so any rude bits would just go straight over the heads of young children.
Yes.
It's kind of like modern Disney and Pixar films. Like, there's jokes in there for the grown-ups.
Yeah. And I guess, like, now that we're talking about Richard, we should probably talk about Richard and Helen.
Oh, yeah. So, obviously, there's no doing art today.
Yeah, Richard, no. Strat and Alex will not do an art this week because Strat is off on his honeymoon.
Yeah.
With other regular podcast contributor Helen.
Yeah, they just done got married.
It's our first Blackshaw marriage. Well, like, you know.
Blackshaw team, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to say that the podcast is responsible for them getting married.
No, definitely not. They were definitely together before we started the podcast.
I was just going to leave that hanging.
Oh, right, okay, sorry. Ruined that.
Well, we hope that they're having a fantastic honeymoon. We went to the wedding on the weekend and it was bloody brilliant.
It was marvellous.
Very good.
If you're interested, I'm sure you can probably hunt down Strat on Instagram and look at
I mean,
at
you could do some Facebook stalking. It's fine. We'll allow it.
So many photos.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Yay. So now that we've done WAF chat, I'm still going to keep saying it. Even if it's not a bloody hashtag,
That's
I'm still going to say it.
Keep saying it.
Matt's going to talk to us about something that... Did you find it on the internet, Matt?
I did.
Did you make it?
I didn't make it. I didn't make it. I would love to say I made it. I do not have the coding chops to do something of this magnitude. I believe someone tweeted it at me.
Okay.
Or I saw someone tweet it. So this is...
It's our pseudo-arts thing of the week, I suppose.
It's not even pseudo, it is.
Oh, you're owning it.
Just because it's not Vicky doesn't mean it can't be arts thing of the week.
That's fair enough, you know.
Because this is an arts thing that anybody can go and experience because it's on the internet. So I don't know how... I presume a lot of our listeners are going to be familiar with Punch Drunk, who are...
They're going to say the internet.
Yeah, I would hope so. So Punch Drunk are sort of the... they're a British theatre company. They're probably the biggest and sort of most well-known immersive theatre company. So they do massive productions where they will take over an environment... and they'll sort of create lots of kind of happenings in there with lots of actors in character, and the audience goes in all. If you're an audience member, you wear a mask to denote that you're an audience member, and you can go and kind of interact with members of the cast and go and explore and find little secret rooms. And obviously, there'll always be stuff going on in different rooms that you don't get to see. And so, like, there's. It's a big sort of immersive kind of thing. They do a lot of corporate work as well now. They're quite in demand.
Mm-hmm.
But the last big production that they did just for themselves and for the art of it was called The Drowned Man. It was in a building which they dubbed Temple Studios in Waterloo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about... it was based loosely on Wojciech. And it was sort of based in the heyday of the movies, like the golden age of the movies. So they set up the whole space as a movie studio. So you could kind of go backstage and you could go through various different movie sets. Like there was a big desert set from a post-apocalyptic movie.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts. Lots of stuff happening. What they've done now...
Did you go?
I went, yes.
Okay. Even just talking about Punch Drunk like makes me quite anxious.
It's not the kind of show that's for everyone.
No.
No.
Yeah.
But I mean, they do their best to make because it is obviously there's a lot of audience participation, but they do do their best to make you feel safe. So the masks mean that people won't interact with you unless you
You
initiate.
You can literally just walk away from something you don't want to watch anymore.
Yeah, and people will, they'll always make sure that they have your consent if they're going to lead you into a secret room and do a sort of one-on-one performance kind of thing.
They're very good at picking up, I understand, on clear signals from audience members. So if you're standing there with your arms folded towards the back, they won't make you come up to the front.
Yeah, but equally there will be sort of, there'll be groups of actors that kind of hair from one place to another, and it can be quite fun to run after them and follow a particular person through all the different sets, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, the thing, so that production has closed. So
it's
you can,
done but, happened.
But you can still part experience it now online. So if you go to tour.templestudioslondon.com, there is now a fully interactive 3D model of the full Temple Studios set. So you can't experience any of the performance that went on in there. So they haven't sort of rendered the actors or any of the action.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to just sort of page through and explore all the environments in a lunch break or in the evening, you can now do that in a fully sort of 3D model.
It's very cool. I've had a quick look, and it's the only place I've ever seen such a kind of unique way of archiving theatrical work. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. I feel like looking at it on your mobile device is probably not the best way to
go
about
it. No, you need
a
big screen, really.
Yeah. Go on.
Yeah,
on
I think it's slightly easier
or
to actually navigate around on a big screen as well.
Yeah. It looks amazing.
Yeah, so if you went to see The Drowned Man like I did, it's quite fun to sort of page around and go, oh yes, I remember that. I remember something that, you know, it brings back memories of the things that happened in the different areas. But you can also explore and go, okay, here's a secret room I didn't find. Mm. Here's a sort of environment which I can scrutinise all the little details at my leisure, because they put so much effort into making sure that every single little piece of paper on the desk and every costume piece hanging on the mirrors is all kind of part of the experience.
And it's a cool thing because, you know, obviously something like that ends, and when you're immersed in it, because you are so immersed, you miss stuff.
Yeah.
And you also have such a good experience that you want to relive it, and being able to go on this and just be like, oh yeah, I remember that, and you get that feeling back, like that's really cool. And the technology is just incredible. Yeah. I mean, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's that point that you made earlier about it being archiving the performance, because this is something theatres always struggle with a little bit, because it's an ephemeral art form.
Yeah.
It exists and then it's gone, and you can experience it a bit from the text.
And photos.
People can film performances, but it's never the same.
Oh, filmed performances are just...
The closest they've got to that working is the National Theatre Live stuff they do.
Yeah,
so this is quite an interesting...
There's budget behind it, it's fine.
Yeah. This is quite an interesting take on it, where they haven't tried to preserve the whole experience.
Yeah.
But they've preserved a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. I like that you brought that to the table today, Matt. Thank you very much for that. And because we talked for so long about 50 Shades of Grey, 50 Shades Darker, or whatever that awful...
The return of the shades of grey.
50 more shades.
How many shades are there?
So many.
Good Lord. Because we talked so long about that and how terrible it is, that's the end of the show for tonight.
What are you going to review next time, Matt?
Oh, I'm going to try and either see Hidden Figures or Moonlight, which are both on the
Oscar
Best Picture
list. I've heard very good things about Moonlight.
Yeah, so
very
have
good.
I. I've been looking forward to Hidden Figures for a long time as well. I only really started hearing about Moonlight when the Oscar nominations came out, whereas I'd been hearing buzz about Hidden Figures a long time before that.
I haven't heard much about either, but I know that the story Hidden Figures is based on is super cool.
Yeah, and the three leads are just amazing in everything.
Yeah.
Actually, I've never seen Janelle Monáe act, but
she is such
a performer.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's incredible.
She is fantastic. I love her.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah, but Mahershala Ali in Moonlight is excellent as well.
I feel like we've missed a lot of Grammys?
Oscar chat. Hashtag Oscar chat.
I've gone music. I feel like
maybe we should wear that next time.
Yeah, I think on the next show we'll do some Oscars chat, and hopefully we're not doing hashtag Oscars so white again in 2017.
Well, from the Best Picture list, probably not.
Yes, exactly. I think we've learned from our 2016 mistakes.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because
anyway,
we are all on the panel.
I got a special request. I don't know about you guys, but I'm there. I'm flying out.
We could do a shadow Oscars jury. what would we say should win?
I don't think we'll manage to get anyone to send us films for free, though.
Yeah. One day.
One day.
So that's the end of the show. On the next show, we're going to be... Matt's going to do either two of those films that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about the Oscars. And maybe the boys will be back and do an art.
Yeah, and in the meantime, if you want to get in touch, then you can reach us at Blackshaw Update on Twitter, blackshawonline.com on the interwebs, or find us on Facebook. We are Blackshaw Theatre.
And listeners, you are completely welcome for that fantastic review that Matt Boothman did. I want to congratulate him again on going to see one of the worst films of probably all time and coming on the show and talking about how terrible it was.
Yeah, good job, Matt.
Thanks, mate.
You didn't embarrass yourself too much.
No, you did good. Anyway, that's the end of the show. We're saying goodbye now.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.